welcome to the Drive Podcast. Ted Henley is off for a couple of days. I'm your guest host, Jalen Nye. We have some great conversation on our show today, so let's get right into it. Mental health experts calling on the federal government to make good on a long-standing promise. In 2020, the House of Commons voted unanimously in favor of establishing a nationwide three-digit suicide crisis hotline. A similar system went into effect on Saturday in the U.S. and, once it's fully operational, offers people who are struggling with suicidal thoughts an easy-to-remember number that puts them in touch with trained mental health counselors instead of police. Cheryl Boswell is the Executive Director of Youth Mental Health Canada. She joins us this afternoon. Cheryl, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us this afternoon. So give us an idea. You know, in many communities, there is a mental health and a crisis, a 24-hour distress line. What is the difference between something like that and one of these numbers, a three-digit crisis number?
Okay. So, yes, we do have a patchwork of crisis support services across Canada and needs-based crisis support services as well. So, you know, for example, Kids Help Phone or the Trans Line, Suicide Prevention Line. You know, we have different crisis support. So they have years of experience in the field and expertise to share. Having a three-digit number creates access, creates inclusion, and creates equity. That's really critical if we want to do better at providing support to people in suicide crisis, mental health crisis, or substance use crisis. So it doesn't mean that we're doing away with those crisis support services that already exist. It means we're coordinating them through a three-digit number that's easy to remember. And because it's easy to remember, people don't have to become detectives about their own health support that's required, that we're facilitating that and providing trained staff training in trauma-informed approaches, culturally sensitive approaches, and understanding intersectional mental health so that, you know, we can't isolate issues and how they impact people's mental health and wellness. So looking at housing insecurity, food insecurity, you know, financial insecurity, all those issues, you know, racism and, LGBTQ phobia, all of those issues impact mental health and wellness. So providing increasing mental health wellness protective factors makes a huge difference. It also states a very clear message that we have national leadership and that together as a nation, we need to share responsibility for suicide prevention and we need to take better care of each other. So this kind of national leadership, creating a national youth suicide prevention strategy, a national suicide prevention strategy with the kinds of funding, infrastructure, trained staff and supports, that the responses to that can be a triaged response. So it's not just listen and support, but provide resources and provide a triage response. So triage response might be somebody's in a suicide crisis. Maybe they need a mobile crisis unit of compassionate responders. So reducing police involvement because a mental health crisis is not a criminal activity. It doesn't require police. It requires compassionate responders going to where people are at and providing the support that's needed at that time and follow-up support, providing community-based respite centers where people can go for a week or two for a mental health break, reducing the involvement of hospitals and the ER department. So cost-effective community-based solutions that are increasing access to mental health supports and services and taking action. So it's not just about talk, but that we are really facilitating access to mental health support.
Well, access to mental health support has been a challenge, I think, across this country. I mean, affordable mental health support. If you know someone who's needed, if you need it yourself, it has been a real challenge, and especially over the past number of years. Cheryl, these numbers, these crisis lines, or this, a three-digit crisis hotline, do people use them? Are they effective?
The three-digit number?
Mm. Yeah.
It was just implemented on Saturday.
Well, and I understand that, but I'm guessing that it's implemented based on previous studies from elsewhere. But do people use these lines?
As far as I know, it's an international best practice.
Okay.
So we expect a strain on capacity for responding to people's needs, because if you're creating access, people will use the service. So we need to create a coordinated strategic response, a proactive, looking at, being thoughtful about the kind of model we want to create so it does well. We don't want to react, the United States is doing it. We need it here in Canada as well. We need guidance from people with lived experience, that we're listening to them and the challenges that they've experienced accessing crisis support. How can we do better? What are the lessons from our American partners? What have the challenges have been? So we can work together with our American partners, as we have done in the past with crisis text lines from the United States that we brought to Canada in for Kids Help Phone.
Uh-huh.
So we've done that in the past, and there's a lot of data collection that is really valuable for providing crisis support and understanding needs of people within communities and the kinds of supports that we can better provide. So those are some of the things that,
Cheryl,
we can do.
We'll have to leave it there this afternoon. Appreciate your time this afternoon. We'll continue to watch this closely, see what happens as this continues to move through the levels of government. But as far as I'm concerned, anything that, helps on this front and, improves access to mental health care in this country, in this province, is much needed and a very important cause. So I appreciate you making time for us this afternoon.
Okay. Thank
Take
you very
care.
Much.
And Cheryl Boswell is the Executive Director of Youth Mental Health Canada. And again, as I mentioned, there's this talk. I mean, and it has been going on since 2020 about getting a nationwide three-digit crisis line. So people who are in crisis, maybe contemplating thinking about suicide, have someone to talk to and have that number easily and readily available. Now, it is important to remember that there are 24-hour distress lines in Edmonton, in Calgary, in many, many communities. 780-482-HELP and 403-266-HELP is available if you need it. But they believe that a tighter number, a smaller number, like a 911, right? We all know that that's the number to call if we need help from police or ambulance. They want to do the same thing when it comes to suicide mental health crises. Wanted to get to this, and it's... I think anyone who, as we get older, or maybe we have loved ones in our world who are older, and we start to worry about falls and stability. My dad was just visiting me. He'll be 79 in a week, and starting to see, maybe not as stable on his feet as he once was. My grandmother had a bad fall years back, broke her hip. You likely heard of a story about the challenges of healing from something like that. Well, there's a new effort underway to try to help stop those kinds of falls. And it's in part being done through virtual medical care. It's really cool. A project underway that's working with virtual care, hoping to reduce the number of falls by Alberta seniors specifically. Dr. Martin Ferguson-Pell is a professor in the Faculty of Rehabilitation Medicine at the University of Alberta, joins us this afternoon. Doctor, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jaylene. Nice to speak to you.
Nice to have you on the show. We know falls are a real, real concern for seniors, aren't they?
They really are. They're a very serious problem, actually. When we look at some of the statistics, we find that something in the region of 35 to 65% of seniors in long-term care will fall every year.
Mm.
And the other most worrying thing is that when you start looking at data across Canada, for people over the age of 65, a fall is probably the primary reason for death for people in that age group in terms of an accident. So these are very, very important things for us to try and prevent. And I think we have some measures to do it. What is challenging is if you're in continuing care, where you may not have access to some of the people who are expert in helping to assess you to look at how you could prevent a fall, and then particularly in rural continuing care, where there is a real shortage of allied health professionals, physical therapists, chiropractors, occupational therapists, and so on, where even, you know, if you were able to, organize something, finding people that can really help you can be very challenging. So that's why we're using virtual assessment as a way of connecting people in an urban center like Edmonton or Calgary to people who are in continuing care who need an assessment to see how we can reduce their risk of falling.
And you're doing it by using a robot?
Yeah, we have two really cool technologies that are really quite important in terms of how we do this. So one of them is a robot. It's called a telepresence robot. And it's essentially like an iPad that is able to move along under the control of a person in the hub location, which will be, let's say, Edmonton, and can move around the room that, let's say, is in Hinton, and be able to interact with the patient and the clinician that will be in Hinton. Or if it's not a clinician, it may well be someone on the staff of the continuing care facility that looks after the residents in the continuing care facility. And the reason we do that is because it's so important to build trust between the person who is in the Edmonton hub location,
mm-hmm.
and the patient and the other person who is based in the continuing care, so that they trust each other and they can hear each other and they can interact with each other. And the robot is very helpful and not terribly expensive either in terms of being able to make it happen.
And so there's a program that's able to measure precisely the patient's balance during a number of tasks. And so obviously that's going to give the doctor, the therapist, some great information. And maybe then you're able to prescribe a program to get, you know, strengthening exercises, balance exercises, that sort of thing?
That's exactly right, Jaylen. So the important thing is that we can do an assessment and make measurements using a special kind of video camera. It's called a depth camera, so it measures in 3D. In fact, if you buy the most recent iPad, it's got one built in already.
Oh, wow.
So that widely available, and again, not terribly expensive. The important thing is that we can just put that in the room and ask the person to perform a series of simple movements, and that enables the expert to be able to say whether or not a certain a person's got a certain risk for falling or having an accident by looking at things like the sway that the person has. So if you assess them with their eyes open and their eyes closed, you see a difference in their level of sway. And that's very important in us understanding, well, why is this person at risk? Is it due to vision? Is it due to their ears? Is it due to something to do with their balance system? Is it to do with the sensation through their feet? But if we knew what it was that was increasing their risk, then we can put in place a program that can help to strengthen that person and overcome some of those factors that are causing that person to be vulnerable. It's very difficult to do with a Zoom camera. You really need something a bit more fancy in order to be able to see something like someone swaying.
And doctor, is it ever too late to get someone started on a program to help with balance and strength, that sort of thing?
No, it really isn't too late. And that the folks that we're working with at the Evergreens Foundation in Hinton, Edson and Grand Cache, for example, a very wide range of people in terms of, you know, where they are, if you like, in terms of their level of fragility or vulnerability to falling. But, you know, even a small amount of that increased activity and strengthening or understanding why they may be vulnerable because they might be dizzy can be very helpful. So one of the things that we do at the very beginning is we make sure that the meds they're on are not causing them to be dizzy.
Mm.
So really, it's a comprehensive assessment of, you know, factors that could make a difference. And then what we can do is we can make a program for that individual person that then helps to strengthen them and reduce that risk.
Doctor, I'm pretty much out of time. What is your hope for this program moving forward?
If we can show that it really is effective in our pilot study that we're doing, Hinton Edson and Grand Cache with Evergreens Foundation, we would like to see other continuing care facilities in cities and in rural settings start to use these measurement techniques and design these bespoke programs so that the program is designed for the individual's vulnerability.
Love it. Dr. Martin Ferguson-Pell joining me this afternoon. I look forward to seeing what comes from the study. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Jaden.
Yeah, take care. Dr. Ferguson-Pell is a professor, faculty of rehab medicine at the University of Alberta. I think it's really cool. And again, if you've dealt with a fall and with a senior, a loved one, you know the challenges that come from that. It's tough, and recovery can be really, really tough. So I think any time that you're working on ways to reduce that, thumbs up from Nye here. We know that farmers markets continue to grow in popularity. Buying fresh produce and knowing exactly where it comes from has plenty of appeal. Well, now a Calgary-based business that specializes in local farm-to-table food deliveries is fulfilling orders in Edmonton. Cultivator is an online farmers market that connects Alberta vendors with you. It launched at the end of 2019. It's continued to grow. It's also using machine learning programs to predict demand. Dan Berzan is the founder. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hey, do you have a go-to trick to repel mosquitoes, by the way?
I don't, and I'm going to ask all my farmers, though, because I'm sure they must as well, but I don't. I wish I did.
Yeah, tell me about it. Well, Dan, give me an idea. Where did this idea come from a couple of years ago when you started it?
Yeah, it literally came from us moving out of Calgary and actually to our place just south of Pincher Creek, and we got to know our neighbors who were all farmers and ranchers, and hearing their stories about how they didn't make any money being farmers and producers, and we were sort of like, well, how can this be, because we just moved from the city and we paid a small fortune for food, so how can you guys not be making any money? And that's where we kind of dove into it, and saw this opportunity in sort of pre-pandemic, saw this opportunity, and then just grew with the pandemic, and because I think people saw the opportunity is we do need to make food more accessible and give farmers a chance to make a living, really.
And so your business, Cultivator, connects with Alberta farmers, ranchers, those sorts of folks, and they set their own prices?
Yeah, that's absolutely how we work. You know, we wanted to be different, you know, rather than the traditional grocery store, which will dictate and say, okay, we're going to pay X for X and, you know, do the commodity pricing. We basically took the approach and said, well, you guys tell us what you need. You know, we obviously have some costs associated with what we do, so we add those in there, and that's what forms the price. So, you know, with us, our farmers and food artisans and ranchers are all getting about 50% more than they would be able to get as part of the food price from the grocery store. So they're really happy to be working with us.
Boy, oh boy. And this is something, I mean, this is front and center. We were talking about it with our beef producers just earlier today, saying, you know, how little money that, you know, many of them are making and how things have to change on that front. Are you, how many farmers do you have as a part of Cultivator?
Yeah, we work with 100 right now, and, you know, as our customer base keeps growing, we'd love to work with more. You know, that's one of the things and why we sort of did the machine learning portion of it, is one of the challenges we know for farmers and producers, and even thinking about ranchers, is how do we change, and how do we change the system, because it's so established the way it is that, you know, if you're a cow-calf operator or a farmer who's, you know, potato farmer who's always sold into the system that exists, it's really hard to change without some some knowledge into how to do it. And, you know, that's one of the things as well, is there's so many things we could be growing here that we don't, that we could, that there is actually a viable market for that people don't think about. Like garlic is one I laugh at the most. It's something we could grow a ton of, and we always run out of it.
Huh. So the program, this machine learning program that you have, is predicting what customers are going to want.
Exactly. And so rather than, you know, hiding that from the producers and then being able to control the pricing, we work with our producers and say, okay, if producer A is growing garlic, we'll use garlic as an example, garlic, and it's being harvested in June, well, maybe producer B needs to grow garlic in a to have it for a July harvest, so that we're actually supplying that demand. Because right now, everyone produces everything at the exact same time, oversaturates the market, and then they sort of, you're almost defeating yourself with pricing.
Dan Berezan joining me this afternoon. He's the founder of Cultivator. Dan, if I ordered from you and wanted, let's just say tomatoes, okay? Yep. Let's just say tomatoes. How fresh are they going to be? Like, how long does it take to get to me?
Depending on where you are, are you in Edmonton or are you in Calgary?
I'm in Edmonton.
Okay. In Edmonton, we're a little slower just because we're coming in there and we need a little bit more lead time to make things efficient. But either way, in the case of Edmonton, if you're going to order today, we'll deliver on Friday, and the tomatoes are going to be picked likely Wednesday.
Okay. All right. So it's very fresh then, what you're saying.
Absolutely. It's literally like, and that's part of how we work is, and part of our technology is based is so that we don't actually go and harvest the tomatoes until you order them.
What about the meat orders? What's the challenges with fulfilling them?
Yeah, there's a little bit of challenge. And again, because we work with producers and small abattoirs. One of the things there is we actually sell frozen meat. The reason why we do that is twofold. One is it allows us to work around that supply and demand, because obviously, you know, it takes time to process an animal. All of our meat is dry aged. So it's you know, it takes 14 days, minimum 14 days just to dry age. But in doing that, the other big component of it, by freezing it and doing it properly, you don't actually affect the quality or the flavor. Now, if you don't do it properly, you can have some pretty disastrous effects. But the other nice thing is that it gives you the freedom as a consumer. We know life gets in the way, and, you know, we all order pizza, and let's be honest. And we have those days. And so if you have fresh meat sitting there and you pivot from your plan, well, now you're running the risk of that spoiling. And so with us, the reason why we did that is so that it doesn't spoil and you can thaw it. You know, the way it's packaged, you can thaw it in your sink in 10 minutes.
Dan, I have to ask you, we know that grocery prices right now are off the charts. We know that beef prices are very high. We know that, you know, fruit and vegetables, very high. How do you handle that through Cultivator?
Yeah, it's been interesting. And this was not something we attempted to solve, but it sort of seems to be working, is that, you know, overall, our producers have only raised food prices about 2% in the last 3 years since we've been operating. And it's sort of been interesting that, granted, we started higher, and, you know, local food does generally cost a little bit more than stuff that's imported, because our vendors pay a living, they have to pay, you know, pay minimum wage to their staff. They have to, you know, it's just more expensive to operate a business here. But, you know, it's sort of funny that our prices haven't been rising. And so what used to be us a little bit more expensive is starting to get closer and closer. And so, you know, local food is starting to actually be very competitive.
Interesting stuff. Dan Berezan joining me this afternoon. It's Cultivator, CultivaterCA is the website. Continued good luck with this endeavor, Dan. It's fascinating stuff. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, you betcha. The founder of Cultivator joining us this afternoon, looking at doing, you know, meat, veggies in a different way, getting them to your home, you know, and helping out those producers as well. And of course, we've been hearing about that a lot over the past number of days.
Hey, I'm Ted Henley. Thanks for listening to The Drive Podcast. Please tell your friends about what you're hearing. Also, please rate, review, and subscribe. This podcast, of course, is free wherever you get your favorite content. If you want to hear The Drive with Ted Henley live, then please tune in or stream the show weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on Global News Radio 770 CHQR.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.